This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here! Second deck walk-off home run, grand slam!
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into episode 205 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on X at Mike_Kurland. Jeez, I haven't done an intro in over 6 months. I'm joined by George. You can follow George on Twitter, X, whatever it's called these days, at @Roto_Nino. I don't know how to do an intro anymore, George. I haven't been a podcast host, and we looked at it. June 15th of 2023 was our last podcast.
Yeah, and I mean, we were still on Twitter back then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. X wasn't a thing up until, you know, recently, and yeah. We weren't. Yeah, but anyway, what's up, buddy?
Just like riding a bike.
Yeah, a few bumps and bruises along the way is what you're saying.
Yeah, but man, this is so exciting, man. I'm glad to be back on the podcast. It is, you know, it's been so long since we've gotten on and saw each other face to face and spoken like this. It's been a lot of just texting for the last like 6-7 months, and I gotta say I missed you, buddy. And yeah. This is nice to finally get back on. And you know, life's been pretty hectic for the last year. You know, 2023 was crazy. Got married, moved, was going, and I mean, a lot of it was just me having to work on a lot of personal stuff, you know, getting my mental health right and stuff, but doing a lot better now. I'm just excited for this upcoming year.
And then you pair it with me just being stupid busy too, and it's just one of those things where this was always like, hey, I'll do it next week. Oh, you know what, maybe next week. You know what, let's just put it off to the end of the season. And now it's January, and we're like, why not get on here and talk and see what happens? No more promises, no more guarantees. But we would like to try to get back to once a week if we could, but it is what it is. For those who stick around and still have us in your downloaded section of your podcast library, we appreciate it. It's going to be a lot of fun today. We're going to talk about some of the recent moves. We're not going to break down too much because your favorite podcast probably already did all these. So we'll talk about a few of the ones that really intrigue us. We're going to talk about some lessons learned and how we're applying what we learned into 2024 for draft prep. And then we're going to talk about some of the just how we want to build a roster, construct our first maybe 10 rounds or so. Not necessarily specific names. If we get into some, that's fine. But we're going to talk about what we like and don't like so far in roster builds, because you and I are both drafting early. We do draft champions. For those who aren't aware, it's a 50 round draft and hold format where you draft what you draft and it's all you have. So draft builds are very different for those. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Some of the differences you might deal with, some of the stuff we've played with. I know I tried something recently I'm not a huge fan of, but that's what these early drafts are for. Help you get, I mean, we still plan them out to the end, obviously, but help you get ready for some of the bigger drafts if you're into those. Or sometimes if you're just really good at DCs like George is, you take advantage of some of those early you guys that are going to rise as we get into, you know, February, March. So I'll get back into the flow of things eventually. A couple moves though. Montas in Cincinnati, if he can get back to like kind of being that sinker splitter pitcher, that repertoire can help play up a little bit with those small fences in Cincy. But we all know that that ball flies there. So if he can't keep the ball on the ground, Montas is going to be in trouble. And not to mention, we don't know what the Vila looks like. He is going around pick 300-ish, like right in the early reserve rounds. So if you're taking him, you're taking him in the reserve rounds in these early drafts, which is fine. In 15-teamers, so in 12s, he would be quote-unquote free. I hate the term free, but you get the point in shallower formats. But with that being said, I'm not super interested in him. But if I want to take a shot on upside, I get it. I haven't landed on him yet in drafts. I have him in my queue right now as we get into these. I'm getting into that round pick 300 range. But he's in my queue, but he's not nearly towards the top. He's like maybe my fifth or sixth in my queue. And even then, if it came down to taking him, am I really taking him? Probably not, to be honest. Where are you at with Montas, though, right now?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I like the price. It's a pretty good, you know, kind of a relatively low risk and high upside kind of a thing, Lee. I mean, he had that one really good season in 2021. And like you said, it was backed by that sinker splitter combo. If you can get back to that, I mean, he's even 2022, like before he was shut down, like he was still showing some good things, kept the ground ball rate high, kept the walk rate low. So if he can get back to that, if he can, you know, if he's tossing, you know, 96, 97, then he becomes, you know, really interesting. So I guess just depends on how he looks this spring, but it's not a bad dart throw. I do see him as someone who, like, if he is back in that throwing in that high 90s this spring, like he probably jumps like 100 picks, like into the 200s, like if he's looking good and he's looking healthy. So, yeah, I mean, good Cincinnati team. You obviously don't love the ballpark. But if you can mitigate some of that with the ground balls, I mean, he's pretty interesting. He could be pretty interesting. I'm with you. I haven't landed on him just yet, but he's someone that I could definitely see taking. Because he's also someone who's, if he's healthy, he's not going to have any like restrictions as far as like innings go. He does have only just one season under his belt with over 150 innings. So you got to like, I guess you got to like temper your expectations on that. But he's not someone who, I mean, that they're going to hold back if he's good to go.
Yeah, I think it's a one-year deal with a second-year option for one of the two parties involved. I'm not sure which side, or is it mutual maybe? But it's one of those things where he's 30. You mentioned it. He's 30. He'll be 31 or right around 31 when the season starts. And I don't see – oh, it's a mutual option from what I'm looking at right here on Fangraphs. A mutual option for 2025. So it's one of those things where if he pitches really well, he will opt out, obviously, I would say. And if he pitches – I think it's one of those things like the middle ground is probably where he ends up getting picked up on both sides. But at the end of the day – I think it's fine. I don't know what to expect. I think it's one of those things where I got to see the velo first. And even then, it'll make him pop back up into drafts. But we've seen even better pitchers than him struggle in Cincinnati. You know, Hunter Green, Lodolo. Lodolo might have been injury related, but Green was like one that was a little bit both. But we've seen Green, who we'd both agree is far better at this point in their respective careers. And
yeah,
look at how we kind of shy away from him even. Because of his fly ball. I mean, he has more of a fly ball issue and all that, but maybe it's a skill set thing. But I don't know. When there's a better pitcher that I'm afraid to take because of the ballpark and half his starts are volatile, Montas being so questionable just keeps me away from him. This was supposed to be quick, so we can move on. Sale and Grissom, yeah. Obviously. Grissom, I think both sides are kind of like a stock up type of deal. I mean, Boston wasn't necessarily, I mean, not that. Truist is a similar, I know it's a hitter friendly ballpark, at least it has played that way in the past, if memory serves. So I don't really know if it's a stock necessarily better team context for Sale probably. But other than that, I don't know. I think Sale, it's going to be one of those things where people are going to move him up towards because it's the Braves. But other than that, with Sale, there's not really much there. I think it's kind of, if you believe in Sale could stay healthy. I mean, the Braves did just renegotiate and give him an extension. So the Braves obviously like what they saw in terms of the physical, and they believe in the skill set and health, I guess, at his age, 30, was he 35 now?
Yeah, 34, 35. Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad gamble. I mean, it looks like a deal that could work for both teams. I mean, when you look at Sale and the Red Sox pitching staff, like, he was someone who, I mean, they would expect to be what, their number one, their number two, you know, one of their top two guys there. When you look at that compared to where he's going now in Atlanta and the expectations there, I mean, if he can be, you know, he could be a really solid number three, number four behind Fried and Strider.
Kind of an important name there.
Yeah. Charlie Morton's still there. I mean, they do have, you know, Freed has his injury concerns. Morton's obviously getting up there. And then Sale, you know, he hasn't been able to really stay healthy the last few seasons. So, I mean, it's definitely not a bad gamble, though. And for Grissom, someone who it seems like they were just ready to move on from, regardless, I mean, doesn't really have a place to play there. He can't play shortstop. They've got Ozzie at second base. Looks like they may be comfortable just letting Kalenic play left field. So where was Grissom really going to be? He was just going to kind of just be, I guess, like a utility guy. I think he could definitely hit well enough to be an everyday player. So that's going to be a little exciting to see what he could do there in Boston if they give him that second base job.
I have him projected to start at second and bat towards the bottom of the order, for what it's worth. That's my personal projection for Grissom. So, you know, he's going to move up boards a little bit. I think he's one of those better real life hitters than fantasy hitters. I think 15-15 is maybe where he lands. Maybe 20-10 type of thing even would be like the high end on the power side of things for Grissom. But Chris Sale, I mean, the skills were still there last year. I mean, he limited walks. His K-minus walk rate was 22.6%, and that's the highest it's been since 2019. So it's one of those things where he pitched 102 innings, so maybe they can get 120-130 out of him. Maybe that's all they need out of Chris Sale, because obviously this is a team that last year really didn't have anything on the pitching staff, and look what they did. You know, they lost all their guys got injured, and they limped into the playoffs with their pitching staff. And not that Sale provides reasons for optimism. He's 34, by the way, going to be 35. I don't know if you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Maybe you did. I just thought about that. But yeah, it's one of those things where I like it for Sale. I'm afraid of where the market might land on him. I'll pull up ADP so I can start referencing it, because I realize it's not really helpful to reference it. So without we're like, okay, we should probably reference the ADP while we're talking about where this guy is. Because now I'm curious, like, let's see where he's going type of thing. And I want to know if you would take him over X or Y player. So I'm going to pull up DC.
I mean, the good thing the good thing in Atlanta is, I mean, even if he makes 20 starts, I mean, he could get a dozen wins. And let's see, DC ADP, I'll just go from December 1st, 170. Yeah. 174.
We're good at this. We're good at this podcasting thing. You know, we're not rusty at all right now. This is awful. Right now, you mentioned he's going 174, right around Berrios, Christian Javier, almost like these other guys that like have had Rodon. It's kind of a type right there, you know? So now I could see him going right around where, like, let's say I could probably see him around Jordan Montgomery, where Jordan Montgomery's going 135. I can see him, like, because that's where Chris Bassett's going, Michael King, Hunter Green. I can see Sale scooting up towards that. And I don't know if I want to pay that is the problem. Like, Sale where he's at now makes sense. Sale where I think he's going to end up because he's on the Braves and gets a little bit of a tax there. I mean, at least those names I mentioned, it's funny because those names I mentioned, I don't necessarily want them at that price either. So it's those things where Sale, I think, creeps up. I think he creeps up relative to the talent in that area. Montgomery, I've taken, I think, once. I think it's because it's a floor play for Montgomery. But how do you feel about Sale according to in that company of Montgomery, Bassett, King, Green? Do you think he belongs there, or do you think I'm overshooting the market correction that's about to happen?
I don't know. I mean, some of it is. I mean, most of it is like his durability and the risk you're willing to take there. I think, you know, maybe we'll get into this when we talk about like our early drafting already, but a lot of it is roster construction based, you know, where you've gone with pitching early. I mean, if you've taken a couple guys who you can count on for 180 innings, then maybe you take a chance on Sale here. I mean, you mentioned the skills are still, you know, still looking pretty good. I mean, he's still striking that, you know, you mentioned the 22% K minus walk rate. Obviously good team for wins. So if you do have, if I do have like a couple of guys, if I've taken a Logan Webb and a Luis Castillo, for example, then yeah, maybe Chris Sale right there as an SP3, who if you can get 120, 130 innings, get a dozen wins and 160 strikeouts. I mean, that's not a bad pick there. I am with you though. I'm probably not going to feel comfortable if he jumps into that 120-130 range. That's probably not a place I'm taking him, just because from what I've
seen in drafts there though. You think he will though? That's why, because like, again, the names I mentioned, I think people are going to stay higher on those names, the Hunter Green, the Michael Kings, but Bassett and Montgomery kind of come off as like people just kind of pick them because they're there and that's where the ADP's add on them type of thing. We've seen Chris Sale go as high as 126. So that is the min pick in this since December 1st. That's why I'm like, I'm wondering, does he, I think he moves up just because now he's on everyone's mind. Like, oh, look, the Braves believed in him. The Braves paid him. I just don't know. I think I'm afraid I'm overshooting the ADP range when I say 130, 140 range. You said 120, 130. That's even higher. I'm afraid that's a 50 pick. That's a 40 pick swing. That's
I mean, Michael King, how much are we expecting from Michael King?
You're right.
143.
That's what I'm saying. I'm wondering if is this overdue correction? Are we going to see Javier come out and shove in spring, get pushed up into that area? I feel like that's a weird area of pitching right there, where like I think Sale and Merrill Kelly belong in a conversation, and that's a 25 pick difference. So I don't know. I'm arguing over a round, but a round makes a big difference in this range because like I think a round makes a huge difference. When people talk, it's only a round difference. You go ahead and get into a draft and think about where you can get a guy around later, that changes a lot of your draft because you're like, well, now I have to reach here to get him. And now the player I would have taken here isn't going to be available to me next pick. So a round difference is a big deal. I think it gets understated, like how big of a deal a round difference can be in certain situations. So that's just a little tangent because, I hear that all the time. It's just a round. A round is a big deal because a round can alter your draft plans completely.
Yeah.
But anyway. But I digress, as I always do. And we can move on from here. I feel like we're harping on this. But yeah, so we can both agree he's going to move up. And it's one of those things where maybe we like him there, but maybe we still don't take him just because I can tell you right now there's names like just as much going later, especially if he moves up. So I'm willing to let Sale go if he goes up as high as I expect. The closer in San Diego, this is your thing. I'll let you talk this one out because they've signed like every international pitcher to a deal.
At this point. Yeah, it's kind of odd, right? I mean, they make the Juan Soto move, and then now they're like kind of signing these international closers now. Building up that bullpen. Not really sure what the Padres are doing, but yeah, they do bring in Yuki Matsui and Woo Suk Go. And I'm not really too sure what to make of it. I think this is going to be something that we're probably going to see in spring training. Like, is Robert Suarez getting the majority of the saves? Is it going to be a committee with Matsui and Suarez? They do have guys obviously who have the experience. All three guys, Suarez, Matsui, and Go, have international closing experience overseas in Japan and the KBO. So yeah, I mean, Suarez is, I'm kind of, for me, the approach is like, which one's cheaper? Suarez is, his ADP in December has been 213. Suarez? Yeah, so he's been going at pick 213. Go is going to obviously shoot up. Yuki Matsui's right at 353. He has a min pick of 129. Wow.
Somebody was optimistic.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Do you simply follow the money here to start the year type of thing?
You can do that. Yeah. I mean, that's typically, Matsui got the 5 year, like he got the big deal, 5 years, 28 million. I would probably, if I had to project it, I would say, you know, Suarez, maybe does get those first chances. If he can bounce back, and then Matsui, that I guess that would be my pecking order. But for me, I'm just like, I'll take the chance on the guy going much later.
And just hope that they land into something, because I feel like they're all going to factor in at one point or another in the season. The Yankees, not the Yankees, the other New York team, the Mets, got Bader today, Harrison Bader. And I plugged him into the lineup as a starter because I think that's why they got him, was to start in the outfield. I do think that him and Tyron Taylor will both figure it out. I think Taylor loses out on the playing time against righties that I initially had him plugged in for because of the glove of Bader. But at the end of the day, is Marte really going to stay healthy? Is DJ Stewart really going to hold on to the strong side platoon of a DH that I haven't projected for? I don't think so. So I think Tyron Taylor is pretty safe pick for DC still. And this might just keep his price really low. And Taylor will have very useful weeks throughout the season. The problem is I just think it's hard to, without an injury, for Taylor to crack the starting lineup as an everyday player. I think he'll be a fourth outfielder type against righties and start against lefties. That's my personal opinion on the matter as of right now. But again, all it takes is one issue of health for a player, or if Stewart proves that, okay, that end of season thing was a fluke, which we all pretty much think it is, there's a chance that Tyron Taylor's starting right away, Stewart just becomes bench fodder and a pinch hit type, and you know they move other guys throughout the DH against righties. So that's why I'm like, I'm not so quick to say, hey, you know, Tyrone Taylor's out, Bader's in. It's more of like a Tyrone Taylor's out-ish, but he's still very DC relevant and a guy that I'll still be looking at later in the in drafts, honestly, because I think the price will pretty much stick right where it's at. I mean, he's already a guy going super late. Like, we're talking reserve rounds, talking, let's see, I'll look it up right now, since the first, he's going 463 on average, a high of 303, which is way too high, a low of 525. I think he'll land in the 400s, right in that range, and I think he belongs in the 400s. He's a guy that I like in the 400s, but if he's going in the 300s, I probably won't touch him. And anything after pick 400, I have no problem taking Tyrone Taylor. So there's a little tidbit. I don't give a whole lot. I sprinkle a little bit of information that of players like these days. I keep a lot of it to myself. That's why I don't do podcasts anymore. No, it's fine. I have no problem. I liked, actually, it was eye-opening, another tangent time with Mike here. Rob D was talking on a podcast about how he can talk about all the players he wants, but if you like them, you have to like them more than he does. And yeah, that's fine. If you're willing to like a player or take a player that I want before me, I have a backup plan. I have preferences, you know what I mean? So if I talk about a player I like, it might not even be my favorite player in that area. It might just be a player I like, or I might really like them. It might be the player I want. But if you take them, always know I have a backup plan. And Rob was kind of suggesting that, like, I could talk about whoever the hell I want, but it's going to be on you to take them ahead of me. And if you're willing to take them ahead of me, and that's fine. I'll just adapt and figure it out. And I think that was a good way of reminding myself, like, hey, first off, who I like isn't that important. Nobody cares who I like, right? I have 1 year of success, and I think people care that much about who I like. I mean, some people will. My opponents will, because they're going to want to make it, and not because they want to know who I like so they can take them because of that. They want to know who I like because if they like the same player, they have to jump them. That's where I think the value comes in, knowing who people like. It's good to know who people like. If, like, you trust their process and all that, sure, and you want to copy them a little bit, that's fine. But my value comes from knowing who people like, to see, okay, oh, they like them too. Guess I have to jump them up a little bit. So it's one of those things where you try to take that in, try to take this information. All right, cool. Like, I know this guy likes the X player X, Y, and Z. If I like player X and Z, I'll let them get their Y, but I want to make sure I jump X and Z a little bit if I think that they might try to beat me to them. That's where that type of information is valuable. So that's how I use it. Some people might use my information and be like, hey, Curlin's on them, I'll be on them too. And that's fine. I take that as a compliment, honestly, but I don't think that, I think I looked at it through the wrong lens before I heard Rob D talking about it. So shout out to Rob D at Pool Hitter on Twitter for those who, or Deadpool Hitter. Sorry. Wait, which one is it? Pool Hitter. Damn it. I'm awful at this. I'm giving a shout out. I don't know the guy's thing. Where is he at? Goodness gracious. Let me give the right name at Deadpool Hitter. It is Deadpool Hitter. Okay.
Yeah. It is an interesting discussion. Cause I mean, last year was your first go at the main event. You're playing main events now. So it's like, you know, where's that line of you know, putting the information out there and then also, you know, keep some of that for yourself to compete.
So the way I look at it is like this. If you notice, I don't tweet about who my sleepers are. I did a tweet about, hey, this is my process on picking my sleepers. I don't say, hey, look, these are the players I want. I say, hey, look, here's a list of players that had this combination of stats, or hey, here's a list of players that did this. Break down a random player on a given day. Like the other day was like randomly Seiya Suzuki. I could be talking him up. I could be talking just because I highlight him. I could be like, oh, look, I'm talking him up. Is it because I like him, or is it because I want someone else to take him ahead of me? It's kind of like where I give the information objectively. I don't give my biases, and I don't give, and even the lineup stuff. I'm doing the whole, you know, I have the MLBplayingtime.com, right? I'm running the site now, like a little blog site, whatever, where I have every lineup projection out there. That's objective information. And it opened my eyes to a few people. Sure, it absolutely did, actually. Not maybe, it did. But I don't let that affect what I put out there. But at the same time, people might not be seeing what I'm seeing. People might not be looking at the same. So, and because I don't have the Patreon anymore, you know, we gave that up. I owe nobody nothing for free, right? So I have no problem. All my information, the way I look at it, I give very objective information. I give, here's the facts, here's what I'm seeing, and I'll give out stuff about, hey, here's my process of how I do things. I think that's very fair to offer, with the occasional, like, hey, I like Tyrone Taylor. Like, I really do. I have no, but the problem is he's going to pick 400, whatever. If I don't get him, I don't get him. He's not hurting my teams. I just have no problem. Like, there's a freebie. There's a guy I like to grab late. He's not there. Okay, fine. It used to be this show was very much like, hey, let's play our flag. These are our guys. And I have no problem doing that but I'll just show my ownership percentages at the end of draft season. But hey, so these were my guys this year. Let's see how I do. But that's kind of like, I've shifted more away from wanting credit for being right on players to trying to give objective information that people can help and hopefully take from that information and do with it. Like, take this information or this nugget of info and apply it how they see fit. So I'm almost like teaching someone how to fish instead of feeding the fish, so to speak. That's kind of how I've transitioned. That's how I've personally transitioned my style of analysis, because I'm still trying to be helpful, but I am keeping my guys for draft season closer to my chest. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's tough because I still want to do content. That's why I do it. But I think I found a niche that allows me to be very objective and allows me to be very like passive with my personal favorites for fantasy baseball while I'm giving out stats and information for people to digest and take in as they see fit. So
I mean, you've been doing some great stuff. Let's plug your MLB playing time.
Sure. I've always been awful at like, hey, let's check this out. No, it's a free site, and all it is like, hey, I think I'm better at projecting lineups than roster resource. It's that simple. That's all it is. So
no, yeah, like, I mean, hey, I'm just saying, that's all. Yeah, when you were discussing Bader, I mean, that's where I pulled it up. I went to your MLBPlayingTime.com and it's all laid out right there. All the projected lineups. You can click on whatever team, and I'm looking at the Mets right now, and it's pretty easy, you know, way to look at it. It's laid out really nicely. So
better on your computer. A cell phone's not great for it, but that's because I'm limited to a free site that costs me about 40 bucks to make, and I'm coming out of pocket, so I'm not gonna overdo it. But it's one of those things where it's like now the Mets line, for instance, my Mets lineup lines up I think identically to roster resource, because I'll do my lineup and I'll go check theirs just to see. I'm like, oh man, like sometimes we'll line up perfectly, and the Mets are one of those that line up perfectly. But the thing I hate about roster resource is they don't show the lineups against lefties, right? Because these days, every team has two lineups basically, one versus lefties, one versus righties. So I really get annoyed when I go there and they don't have that for me to look at. So that was part of the reason behind it. I was like, screw it, I'm doing it myself. And then I'm like, but then there's just ones where me and him don't have the same people projected to start. It's early January, so we're both gonna be wrong on plenty. But if me and him are completely different on a lineup, that offers perspective, and it offers a way for you to dive in. Well, why are they different? Let's see what they saw, or ask me why I saw this. Like, I think the Oakland A's stand out to me because I have Nick Allen starting at shortstop over some guy I never heard of that he has plugged in at shortstop. So I looked at both players and I'm like, well, Nick Allen has the track record of being up there, played like 100 games at shortstop last year or something like that for them. So I was like, why wouldn't he get the nod to start day one? I don't know. It was one of those things like I kind of followed the trends and followed the playing time from last year more so than, and then this guy I've never heard of being plugged in over Nick Allen didn't make sense to me. So I made that swap. And it's one of those things where, and then I have that note section, and that note section helps gives a little reasoning behind why I do the things I do, or B, gives a little context where roster resource just, that's his opinion and there is no context. And I think having context is a big deal because it helps not justify my reasoning, but it helps kind of maybe when I do that usually with things that are different, very different from us resource. Like, hey, I did this because of X, Y, and Z. And usually my reasoning is to help justify the roster resource differences, because I've had people reach out to me saying, hey, I use yours and roster resource just to see the differences and see what else you guys have going on. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's all I really wanted to do with it for now. There are bigger plans for it in the future. I honestly wasn't even planning on doing that this year, but I decided to do it because we had downtime, and I'm trying not to draft literally like, you know, Zach Wax drafts like every day, multiple times, like multiple like draft day. He's hopping in new ones all the time. That would be me if I had the money, but I don't want to, not only do I not have the money like that to be drafting every single day, but I also want to not do that because I know how hard it'll be for me to set lineups in season.
Yep.
Anyway,
yeah, I'm with you.
Real quick, we can go right into what we learned, and you'll talk about why you do these more, but Mauricio, obviously torn ACL, we knew he was gonna be out. He's probably gonna miss most of the year, can come back towards the end, but probably Brett Beatty and Mark Vantos, big gainers there. I don't think the Mets at this point are going out and getting a third baseman unless they go out and get Turner from so that would be the only thing. I keep thinking of Trey Turner, but it's not it's Justin Turner.
Yeah,
I keep thinking of Trey for some reason. But and then so for the Blue Jays, IKF and Biggio, the GM came out and said that they were okay. He was okay with them, and like they felt good about where they're at. Like really, really BS coach speak type stuff. And I'm like, they must really be willing to give, you know, Aurelvis Martinez or Addison Barger both maybe a shot even to start off. Both played third base in the minors last year. Barger I gave the edge to when I projected the lineup, because I just refused to give IKF and Biggio a starting job on a team that wants to compete. I think that's fucking ridiculous, and I hate cursing, but that's where, like, I try not to curse on the podcast, but it's pretty freaking ridiculous, you know what I mean? And you could tell I stuttered when I said the word. I was like, oh man, I wasn't trying to. But so Barger being the 24-year-old, having more time in the upper minors, I think Martinez has a lot of string and miss to his game. I think Martinez has a higher ceiling. Barger having a higher floor in production, but also being not only older, but also being a lefty. And this team always tends to need that power hitting lefty. And they have, they have Biggio and they have Varsho and they have Kiermaier, not exactly power. And Horwitz isn't a power hitting lefty either on the bench there, which, so I think Barger can come in day one, play third base for this team and be a lefty for them, but we'll see. I think I'm being a little too optimistic with them. I just don't see how they feel honestly okay with IKF and Biggio. I don't think any Blue Jays fan, I don't think anybody wants to see that. I don't think the Blue Jays really believe that. There's no way. And if they do, I'd be very surprised. But they're talking about adding a lefty DH. So if they don't want to go with Horwitz, obviously we know Votto's a good chance of getting signed there, maybe. Or Jock Peterson was recently attached to the Blue Jays. So that was kind of the last two little pieces of news. I just wanted to say my condolences to Jays fans, because to be in my big thing, I think why the reason why I'm laughing with them, not at them, because I think it's really crappy, is that this team was said to be in and really close to getting Shohei, right? Like they were part of the finalists, whatever. And yeah, to be that close and willing to sign that type of deal to a player, to turn around and spend what jet fuel costs to to acquire the rest of the players they recently acquired is kind of a slap in the face to their fans. And then they go from saying, yeah, they pretty much said, hey, we're good with what we have. And that blew me away as like just an outsider looking in, like, wait, you guys were in on Shohei and this is what you do in free agency after that? No big splashes, no, like, even bring back Matt Chapman as a third baseman just for the defense, if nothing else. I mean, stuff like that, like nothing, absolutely nothing, mind-blowing. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, as a Giants fan, I can kind of, they were in on Ohtani and Yamamoto, and looks like, yeah, I mean, of course the Giants just whiffed on those, and they haven't done anything, I think.
But at least they went out and signed, like, you don't have to like it. Obviously, it was bad, but Mitch Haniger, they went out and signed. They went out and spent some money at least. And then this year, they went out and got Lee, which, again, you don't have to like it. But at least they went out and they're like, you know what? We meant it when we were spenders. We're going to go get players. Even if they were marginally better than what they had before, they still went out and did something. If the Blue Jays went out and spent that type of money and made those types of mid-level moves with the one guy being above mid-level in Lee, I think Jays would be in a better spot, because the team has such a strong core and foundation already, that if they went out and made those types of mid-level moves, that the Jays would be a team that were more ready to compete. But that's neither here nor there. That's where I get frustrated for the fans, because, like, if you're that in on Shohei where you're willing to spend that type of money, you can definitely suck it up and go spend some mid-level money somewhere else. But so, DCs, you said you're done with Fab. You want to explain that a little more? You want to talk about some of the things you might have learned from last year that you plan on applying this year, besides the fact that you're not playing any Fab leagues?
I'll do I have a couple of Fab leagues that I'll do, like the Scarf League, part of the Earth leagues. That's Fab. Probably do TGFBI again. So a couple of Fab leagues, at which hopefully I could put the time into actually.
I'll just give you my
better at this year. Week.
Like, hey, here, this is what I'm doing in my mains. If you like, I'll just help. Like, if you're busy, like, hey, here's what I'm doing in my mains. See if these guys are there and go from there.
That'll help. I mean, yeah, it always helps to, like, you if you have. Friends.
I'll be full.
I mean, of course. Yeah.
Well, it's not a matter of learning. It's a matter of, like, hey, you're busy, I got you. If you're good, you're good. But I'm just offering my services because I'm gonna be, balls deep into this stuff. So.
But yeah, I mean, DCs. Like I said, just because the time commitment, like, that you have to put into Fab. Like, I like the DCs where you could just set your lineups. I think for me, part of it is the focus that I do put into relief pitching. That's kind of where I start my process every year is I'll go through the player pool and I'll look at, like, which really late relievers that I like and kind of build my drafts around getting those targets. Cause I've kind of been one that, like, I don't really like paying high prices for closers. Of course, I mean, there's plenty of ways to win, but that was kind of my approach last year. I had I came out of almost every draft with Will Smith, Odbert Alzolay, and a lot of Evan Phillips. So, I mean, that was like over six, that was like 60 saves right there. And yeah,
Are you afraid? Sorry to interrupt, but I might have to ask, because like, are you afraid of like that being a fluke? Like, I know it's almost like I'm like, part of you just wants to second guess it, because was that your first year really employing that kind of like, I'm gonna just go all in on these later guys?
Right. Yeah. So I mean, it's all dependent on finding those guys. If you recognize guys like that, if not, then it obviously, like, I would have to invest a little bit more. I'm still kind of deciding where I'm at this year. I do have like a few targets that I'm eyeing late. But that's kind of where I'd like to build, like start with my draft prep, is where am I going to target my saves? Cause yeah, I don't like to invest so much into trying to secure like that one category, early in the draft, especially because I do a lot of these DCs and they're 15 teamers. I don't do a ton of 12 teamers. It's just, I just kind of enjoy doing the roster construction and the deeper team building in the 15 teamers. So when you are playing 15 teamers, like, you know, you're going deeper into the player pool, and those early rounds, the stats that you're getting in all the early to mid rounds kind of mean a little bit more. If you're hitting on those players and getting the floor and the upside that they give you in the early rounds. So I like to build my hitting and starting pitching, just because, you know, obviously they impact more categories, you know, 9 out of the 10 that you're going to be competing with. So I don't like to invest so much in chasing that one category. So if I could find those late guys that I can hit on, and I think they really propel those teams forward. I mean, last year I had one DC that, man, I had like 2 weeks left in the season. It was like top 7, top 8 overall. And that was a team with the three, like Alzolay, Smith, Phillips. Obviously Alzolay and Smith kind of fell off with Alzolay's injury and then Smith losing the job, but they kind of got what I drafted them for. They got the 20 plus saves. And then it was like, I had Strider, Luis Castillo, Aaron Nola, Braxton Garrett. They kind of struggled like the last couple weeks. Ended up finishing
just 20th. Just in time. Yeah. You have to finish top 15 or top 10.
Yeah. Ended up finishing 20th overall, which is fine. I mean, I was really happy with that. But I think Braxton Garrett had like an 8 run outing or something like that. That really, really hurt. But I guess I kind of should go into, like, kind of what I learned with that is, you know, I do start my draft prep with finding like the late save targets that I want to go for. And I think what I found myself falling into last year was not diversifying enough in the early mid rounds. Like, I found the guys that, like, I found my roster construction and the players that I really liked, and I was just hammering those guys in the early mid round. Like, I had a lot of Kevin Gausman, Luis Castillo, and yeah, they worked out great. But I also had on those same teams a ton of Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, and Drew Rasmussen. So like, I didn't diversify enough, because I, like, you know, Christian Javier didn't work out, and Garcia and Rasmussen ended up getting hurt early. Maybe things would have worked out differently if they stayed healthy. But like, that's a big thing for me this year. It's like, okay, like these rounds, like, of course, they can hurt you more than help you if you're like doing a lot of drafts and you're taking a lot of the same guys and not diversifying enough, like, things can definitely go south. So that's one thing I'm going to try to do this year is just, you know, there's guys obviously that I want to avoid just for the risk at their cost, for both like injury and performance. And we'll get through those like throughout the draft season, as far as the guys we're fading and stuff. But, yeah, the player pool at the top of the mid rounds, like, I definitely need to diversify a little more so that, you know, I do have, and obviously if I'm only doing like one or two DCs, I'm going to play it a little more safer. But if I'm doing multiple DCs, you know, 6, 7, 8 DCs, then I definitely got to diverse a little bit. So that's one thing that I'm definitely going to focus on.
I've been pretty good about diversifying my early rounds so far, and I've actually tried out completely different things. I know what I've learned I don't like this offseason instead of last offseason was I don't like, so I tried the dual stud closers in this recent DC, and it's nice not having to worry about saves almost the rest of the draft, right? Like, that's kind of cool, but also, you know, I don't want to act like saves are the only thing you get out of them. You know, it's Hader and Edwin Diaz. So we're talking elite ratios, elite strikeouts per, like per strike K per nine. Like the only time, I wouldn't say K per nine really matters in your analysis of a player, but it, like when you're trying to build your, you know, you're trying to get quantity of strikeouts, you want a good, you want a player that gets more than a strikeout per inning. You want, you know, a good amount of strikeouts. And those guys are both guys that can strike out 100 as a relief pitchers. I'm not saying they will, but 80 to 100 are probably the likely outcome for both these guys, right? So you're getting strong ratios. You're getting solid 60 to 80 saves between the two, assuming, you know, regardless of what team Hader lands on. And it's nice to have that kind of that foundation in play, but I didn't like how it set me up to have to like kind of chase globs of hitters and globs of pitching. But I do like my skill set. So I'm the opposite of you, like not the opposite in terms of like my content mostly got me into like, hey, I know playing time pretty well, I'd say. And I also know how to, I also know teams, 40 man rosters and guys are going to come up, et cetera. So I'm like, so it, I did the opposite. I'm kind of building around hitters. Like what hitters do I like at the end of the draft and how does that affect? So that's allowed me to kind of do my pitching heavy build. So even with the dual RPs, I don't, like I like going pitching heavy, but I don't in the early rounds to give me that base of starters, because if I, as long as, you know, again, health is a big deal. You can't really predict injury. You can just predict which player you just seem you, based off history, right? That's kind of your best predictor. But is if health being all health being equal or whatever, I like to go pitching heavy first because I don't like having to depend on guys in the reserve rounds to have to get me through the year. I like those guys being there in a pinch for an injury, not a guy like as needed or as a streamer, I should say, because I don't want to have to depend on those guys too much. Now I get it, DCs, you don't really have a choice. You're kind of like, it is what it is. Everyone gets injured almost. But if I can kind of build a solid core to where now one of my guys goes down, guys I'm plugging them in with week in, week out, won't be such a beating on my ratios and stuff because I've already built in, I still have the other guys carrying majority of the weight, if that makes sense. So I realize that's what I like to do because I trust myself to identify enough hitters in those reserve rounds to I can kind of treat my lineup like a platoon, and week in and week out, I just put in a guys at a couple positions that, you know, per matchup. So like with NFBC, it's twice a week, right? So Monday through Thursday and then Friday through Sunday. So you look at the schedules, you figure out who's facing who, and you figure out which players on your team are running hot, cold, and otherwise. And then you plug them in as needed based on matchups, based on, you know, platoons, whatever it might be. And because I know how teams operate or feel strongly about how teams are going to operate and, you know, platoon certain guys and all that, I feel like I can identify playing time, and I feel like I can stream effectively even in the DC. So I kind of went that route this year of like, I'm going a little more pitching heavy in my builds, and I'm going to stream off my bench at least like one or two spots. Not going to go crazy, but having that comfort, like having the five outfielders in a DC, people are, I've heard a lot of podcasts talk about outfield depth, you know, attack outfield because outfield is like iffy, blah, blah, blah. I get it, but that's also where like the most depth is, right? Outfield is really deep when you think about it because of how many there are. So if you're comfortable with platooning, like I am, like I have no problem, or I'm comfortable with like picking out players who are going to play more, like just because of their platoon splits or whatever, I have no problem personally putting in the work to utilize that strategy even in DCs. It's more viable in Fab Leagues, I feel like. Streaming weekly with hitters is more viable than Fab Leagues, but hitters are also easier to bank on off the bench compared to the hitter stats or the pitching stats you're going to get. So I've been finding myself enjoying building like that so far. I am going to try. I have a couple more DCs to do, so I'm going to try a different couple things, but one thing I don't like is taking two early closers, and I won't be doing that again. I've taken it before, but never like my second and third round pick or third and fourth round pick. I went pitcher, hitter, closer. So yeah, that was weird. I didn't like that. So I wouldn't do it again, but yeah. Last year. So lessons are real quick. Lesson last year was, I put too much emphasis on teams, 40 men rosters. I didn't put enough, you know, and I think everyone missed on the idea of how big rookie impacts would be. I don't think we have the same level. I don't think we have the same level of rookie impacts. But what we do have now is a track record of teams who like to call up their prospects and who don't. Teams like the Pirates hold down their prospects even with the new rules so far, you know? So is Skeens, right?
Yeah.
That's how you say his last name. I should know this. I've heard it 1,000 times. Yeah, Skeens. He's going right around those reserve rounds, like right around pick 300-ish or so. And I think he's going to be great. I don't know how much we see him this year just because the Pirates aren't known for being a team aggressive with their prospects, even with the new rules in place. However, you have a team like, I don't know, I gotta find a team right now, but there's teams, you know, teams that are more aggressive with their prospects. A team like the Marlins, for instance, have been really aggressive with their pitchers for a long time now, but especially now. So maybe that could help. So you just have to, knowing that stuff kind of matters more. And what I guess at the end of the day, it doesn't matter about being on the 40 man because teams find a way to get you on there. It used to be a kind of a deciding factor. Oh, this guy's not on the 40 man. This guy is. This guy will get the opportunity first because he's already on the 40 man. You don't have to clear a roster spot for him, blah, blah, blah. I feel like teams are way more willing to make a point. Like, I remember last year being kind of afraid of certain players because they weren't on the 40 man. I'm like, well, if they're on the 40 man, it's already in March. Why? Like, when are they? And they got put on there like right away. I can't. What's his face? For the Cardinals. I remember. Why am I blanking here? Jordan something.
Walker. Jordan Walker.
No. Walker. Thank you. Thank you. You know it's Walker. Yeah, it's Jordan Walker. Wow. Okay. What is? I told you I blanked out, but yeah, Walker was a guy that I'm like. I remember being like skeptical just because I'm like. He's on the 40 man, and like that matters, but it didn't matter. They made a spot for him on the 40 man, and they, you know, they had him break camp and everything. So I missed out being overly concerned about 40 man stuff, which in the past, again, in the past mattered so much more before the new rules. So I think that was kind of a big learning curve. Like, hey, don't put so much emphasis on the 40 man. Know the 40 man, because that still will matter for some teams, but most teams are like, hey, you know what? 40 man doesn't matter. We'll just DFA somebody to get this rookie up because of just the way it's been. So just one of those things where it's like that was one of my big takeaway. My prep was like maybe less emphasis on the 40 man in certain situations or with certain teams, knowing good and well that they'll just like discard some player without caring if they want to bring up a prospect when they think he's ready. So stuff like that was like, I found interesting in my prep this year so far. I think that's all I got I feel like there's more stuff. Oh, that's all DCs. Yeah. DCs. I really didn't learn a whole lot. I feel like, cause I'm like, I'm a good player, but I'm not like a great one. I won cash 2 out of 5. I think only winning one last year. So I can, you know, I'm good enough to win, but it's not my strength. So I should be looking at how to, I'm trying to think what I did. I did look into it a little bit. I think what it was, I drafted so many of them so early that I ended up with like a lot of, I think I had Hoskins, Trevor Story combo on 2 of my 3 early teams was part of the issue. So I couldn't, like 2 of my top 100 picks were both gone or wherever they were at the time. Yeah. And so stuff like that. That was my big issue, was I drafted good depth because I think one of those teams I cashed in third place actually. So that's one of those things that shows you, like, you build good enough depth, you could still win or cash with a injury riddled team. But I think that's my thing, was a lot of it was just drafting too early. I think my process was okay. I think my team building skills are there for this format. I just gotta get better at, I still need to get better at projecting rookies. I think that's something I still have a hard time, even after telling myself, hey, you have to be more aggressive. You don't like necessarily, like, I don't know, it's hard. I tell myself, like, I'm like, hey, you have to be more aggressive, but I still have these things like hold me back and make me apprehensive to buy in, even after seeing it over and over again. It's a weird thing. It's because of, I guess, those, you know, how long has it been now? 5-6 years we've been doing this, and rookies were never treated this way. So I've had such a hard time adapting. So I've realized when I do take my rookies, I do take rookies, but they're usually in the reserve rounds. I don't like to bank on them starting. And then I do end up missing out on the fun ones usually. But last year was a good year to miss. What, Volpe and Walker were two of those guys that flew up boards and honestly didn't really pay off. So
yeah, not mad. Yeah. There's so many ways to win. If you don't hit on those like exciting rookies that everyone is pushing up, I mean, there's a lot of ways to win. So yeah.
But I don't know, anything else you've learned in DCs that you've applied, or you're just kind of you're still kind of figuring out your own process in this way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you realize what worked for you last year, so you're trying to see if it works with you again this year. And I feel like that's where we've entered this weird thing. Another thing I did learn for Fab Leagues was I'm not going crazy with streaming like prices, because I remember early in the year, and I say prices, I mean like the Fab cost, that acquisition cost, because I remember early in the year I would drop like 20 on some guy I thought I liked for the week, and like 15 and then like 30 for another guy I liked for a little more, maybe for a week or two. If I believe in a talent, I'll go for him, right? I'll go for him and I'll be like, okay, he's a streamer, but I think there's more here. But I realized that I'm going to go in with like the set price of my brain of like, I'm not paying nearly that much anymore for streamers. I'm going to set like even from day one, while everyone's going to be dropping like 20, 30 bucks on streamers, 50 bucks, 40 bucks on some random streamer they like, I'll be doing like $5 to $10 range. But that's because my comfort level is going deep into the player pool for streamers. So my waterfalls is what we call them these days, right? My waterfalls will have like 7, 8, 9 players in them. So I know I'll get one of them for $3 to $5. And as long as I'm okay with those guys being who I land on for the week, then I'll keep my prices really low. Like keep my prices relatively low because all that money is going to do, all that's going to do is compound the money available to me at the end of the year, which is where I fell short last year. And what cost me my main event win was running out of fab money. I lost my lead by half a point on the final two or three days. And that hurt. And I was top 10 for 2/3 of the year overall. Right. So
yeah,
that's why it's like, I learned a lot from that. It just fab management was my big takeaway. And I think part of what can help me be a better fab manager isn't just being continue to be efficient, which I found a process that helps me be efficient in my own way, in my own leagues, but it was streaming money. I got to cut back on the streaming money and I have to give myself like be firm in these prices I'm setting for myself. And I'll be okay. Cause again, my waterfalls are pretty deep. I've never not gotten a player. Like, it's rare that I don't lose. Like, if I want to drop a player, they get dropped. I'm going through like the sewage of player pool to find players to drop. Like, I will find somebody that I think is worth a dollar or two if I have to. But yeah, that's all. That was my biggest takeaway from last year, I'd say, for Fab Leagues, was the amount of money I wasted on streamers by overpaying for them. It's not worth it. $20 for a week because it's early in the season and inflation is real in the early in the season. People are going to see my teams and they're going to see Curlin got insert crappy platoon player here for $3. And that's what I'm streaming. Yeah, well, that's I do. I mean, that's the downfall. I won't get the best streamers, I'm aware. But I think when you look at it from the long term, how many of those streamers stay on your team for more than a month? For $20 for a month is worth it. I agree there. But I think that's like best case scenario, though. The average streamer is on your team for a week, maybe two. And you put $30 on them because it was week four instead of the same $5 that same player will cost you when you reacquire them in August. So it's one of those things where it's like, I think we're skewed to spending more money because there's more money on the board. Whereas you should just be okay. Try to get comfortable streaming similar talent, but maybe you're less confident in it type of thing. And I don't know. I just think there's options that you can get for cheaper that'll provide similar value or return on investment. So that's where my head's at with the fab stuff. And it won't be for everybody. And maybe I'm overestimating my skill set or ability to stream because I did really well last year streaming hitters. So I think that's why maybe I'm thinking I could do it again. One of those things, like, you found your thing that worked for you. I found what worked for me.
No, it makes sense. You put the time into it, that you do the research. You found, you know, that works for you. That's your strength. I mean, there's nothing wrong with
going back to the well, right?
Yeah. Part of it for me too, with my strategy is like, just, I'm kind of comfortable. I'm comfortable playing for the league. And if things break right and I have a team that is doing well in the overall standings, then that's awesome. But I think part of it for me is like, I'm comfortable playing for the league to win the league first. I just try to like hammer down the other nine categories. That's why I'm fine just like pushing saves.
I don't know. And that goes back to why I'm comfortable. Like, people are like, hey, get outfield early. And I hear podcasts, I'm like, you can, or you can just make sure you have like a decent amount in the reserve rounds and like be comfortable starting Jason Hayward in the, like, you know what I mean? Be comfortable. Like, comfortable is relative, I'm aware, but like, why are we afraid? Why are we so afraid to stream from our benches in DCs? People look at DCs as like, I feel like people look at DCs in a way of they want to maximize every potential spot, which you should, but it's one of those things where people are afraid to utilize this idea of streaming, right? Because nobody wants to be stuck streaming off their bench, but you're not going to be strong at every position. So you have to pick your weaknesses and hope that you're strong enough in your tactics in addressing it, right? So for instance, you might know you're like, hey, I'm entering the year probably weak on saves, but I trust my process to get those saves throughout the year one way or another, injury, performance, whatever. I'm drafting my teams like, hey, I'm going to be weak at outfield, but I have four or five outfielders I really trust that I can stream any given moment to on a week based on matchups. And that I have to know that's I have to remember, like, when I look at my roster and see, I think one of my rosters has Lamont Wade as my starting corner infielder. Obviously, that's not going to be an all season. That's going to be he's going to be very much a platoon guy. But I realized that when I messed up drafting corner infield, like, okay, I had to get a little, I made sure to attack it with depth. And so that way I know I can kind of rotate players in and out there as needed. So it's one of those things where you have to realize where you're trending towards in terms of your depth or lack of, and you have to attack it. And I don't know, you kind of have to realize that in a 15 teamer specifically, there's going to be holes on every roster. You just have to make sure you're comfortable where those holes are at and address those in the reserve rounds to be able to make it a strength as the season goes along.
For me too, Yeah, definitely. For me, that's also why I I won't do early catchers. I don't like doing early catchers personally. Not for like the favors.
I mean, you just came in 20th overall. Who am I to tell you otherwise?
No, I mean, I think that team had Nick Fortes.
Now, do you think one early catcher or an early closer make the difference for you in winning the overall? Or
it might competing? Have. It might have made it. I don't know about catcher, but maybe another closer because I.
Did you mention you like came up short because taken, of...
if I had a closer in the spot where I lost Luis Garcia, if I had like a Clay Holmes there, you know, that might have made a huge difference. So yeah, I might be something I have to dive into, but yeah, for me, I like to push off catchers as well, just because for me, it's like they make the least impact, I guess. Right. You're looking at 450 to maybe 550 plate appearances. So whereas like in the other spots, you're shooting for, you know, you're shooting for 600 plate appearances, 600 plus. So for me, I like to push off catchers as well. I don't like to pay up for early. Last year it worked out. I had a ton of Yainer Diaz. That certainly worked out.
I think it's a matter, but you landed on the catcher that got those 400 plus plate appearances in the reserve rounds is what it is. So it's one of those things where if you're going to go for catcher, the reason why people, you know, push back for early catcher is you're getting those plate appearances and quality ones at from a catcher spot where you normally don't get. Now, if you land on this year's Yainer as well, then you obviously you're just hitting on them late. You're still getting a difference maker at a position. So it goes back to the argument. It goes back to like, if you're not, so you being so comfortable with closers, I'm surprised you don't take yourself one early catcher just to solidify the position, because now that's because why you're going to start yourself off with two potential weaknesses in your rosters by having on closer and catcher. That seems, I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, if it works for you, it's great. I'm just surprised it works because I couldn't pull that off. And maybe you're just better than me. So.
Last year I was like really late catchers, but I've done maybe a handful of drafts. I've done two DCs, two gladiators, and a 50. And what I've found for this year at least is I've been grabbing a catcher like in like the 10th round, 10th, 11th round. So like a Logan Ohapi, like in that range, Cabert Ruiz, like I'm looking like in that range for like my first catcher, and then I'll just push off my second catcher until like the maybe 20th round. But so like for this year, I don't know if there's that like that Yainer Diaz is like that 500 like that 500 ADP pick that's gonna like make a huge impact at catcher. Like I don't know, maybe it's not necessarily like that late, but I think maybe Henry Davis could be that guy. That's like you can
he's
get
going
late,
right.
Like,
he's getting pushed up though. He's pushed up like 200s, like early 200s now.
Yeah. That's but I think that I'm perfectly fine. I've gotten a couple Henry Davis shares already, and I think for me, like I'll push catcher back to where I'm comfortable at this year. I want to grab a Logan Ohapi. If Henry Davis is my first catcher and I draft an extra one to just fill in until he gets that catcher eligibility, I'm perfectly fine with that too. But I think just the overall point is investing so much in a position that may not make as much of an impact on your team as like other players can.
Yeah. I can get behind that because I like getting one of the, but like you said this year, and I like it this year too, is I'm also living in that range. There's like there's a grouping of like six, let's see, where they're all going between 140 and 170. So like a 30 pick of range, you have like Sal Perez right around there, Rowley, Wilson Contreras, Francisco Alvarez, Sean Murphy, Moreno, Naylor, Ohapi, and Ruiz right at the back end of that. Heim kind of lingering around there too in this 30 to 40 pick range. It's just really funny that I can see a path to value and ROI on all those names. And that's why it's like just living. I like to live in that range this year. Mm-hmm. It's funny though. I still find myself liking JT Realmuto in the fifth round, sixth round range, because he's falling at what, pick 75 right now on average, as low as 96. And it's more so the way I build my team is like hitter, three pitchers lately, like kind of how I started. And then it's like the hitters come around again. I'm like, I kind of need some speed because I kind of passed on it for, you know, my pitching. So Romuto, his speed isn't valuable in the grand scheme of things, but he's been that speed would be valuable to me with the way of how I've built out my early team. So Romuto's been a guy that I haven't actually landed. Every time I go, I'm like, oh, I'll take him. He hasn't fallen to me, and he's always at the top of my queue. So I'm like, I don't get him. But he's a guy that I have no problem taking him where he's going, but he's kind of like, and then after that, he, because of, again, it goes back into my personal team builds, I think he still offers that type of I think his skill set is valuable to me. I know it's not valuable, more, it's not as valuable as it used to be overall. But yeah, Romuto's kind of that first, kind of the earliest I've seen myself wanting to go catcher. I love the idea of Adley Rutschman because he's that guy that's going to get all those plate appearances at catcher, but I just don't love paying the price, the premium. I hate paying a premium for catcher this year because we just talked about the happy zone for catchers.
Yeah, and I think it's overall course. Like, the I really like the hitters in like
the first, you know, 5-8 rounds.
You'll see that, like, I've seen a lot in these drafts I've done so far. Like, you'll get into like the fourth and fifth round, and it's like those rounds are like all pitchers. You'll see teams, you'll see like maybe a handful of teams that went like hitter, and you could be just because like you see like the Strider, Burns, Wheeler, Gausman, Castillo, Garrett Cole. I mean, you'll see those guys go in the first 2-3 rounds, but you'll see a handful of teams that went hitter, and then you see a ton of, you know, it's a ton of yellow in the like fourth, fifth, and sixth, because you have that, you know, a big old glob of like, from like, for me, I include Pablo Lopez in that first group, but like after Pablo Lopez, it's like I guess you could throw Glasnow in there too. I'm not really like,
I love Glasnow.
I don't like paying the price. I know you do.
He's one of those few guys I have no problem admitting I love, but I'm also aware of the price. Even the price for me, it's like, oh, I guess, but it makes my butt clench, you know, like, oh, am I really doing this right now? But then you look at the guys going behind Glasnow. Screwball, kind of the same guy, right? Like kind of the same concept of a player. Nola is interesting. Peralta, you know, has his warts too in terms of health. It's one of those things where it's like Glasnow isn't worse than those guys. I do think we all wish he was going there, but I think everyone can dream on Glasnow a little bit, and that's why he gets pushed up that 10 picks. But I think people are overblowing the price of Glasnow because they haven't looked at what's right behind them. Unless people are just that much more comfortable with what's behind them, I don't know. But I think Glasnow is going right where he belongs. I just think the price is getting really hard to get used to.
Yeah. I mean, like I was like, you look at the pictures, like in that fourth to sixth, like round range, like I mentioned, like Skubal, Nola, Peralta, Yamamoto, Logan,
Yamamoto, Framber. Yamamoto got pushed up early third in my draft recently, or like the 3-2. So
he's not going to be in this range anymore. Yeah.
No,
he's
going to
be a third rounder now.
Yes. And I don't like that. I wanted to get one share. I was willing to take him at the end of the third because I had a background pick. I was like, I'll have fun. I'll take him there because I just wanted a share, right? Really badly wanted a share. And he didn't fall to me. He went 32nd overall. I was trying to get him at like 40 something overall. And I didn't even get him there. And I was upset. I was sad. I wanted one share. I'm not paying early third. I'm not paying early third for him. But mid to late third, I might do it once just because I really want to share him because I really do think he's going to be really good this year.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I
like this range, this next range of pitchers too.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you went like early hitter, or maybe you grabbed one of those top like 7-8 pitchers, and this range is great. This is where going back to like the diversification. Like if I'm doing one draft, like maybe I grab like, I love this range, so maybe I'll grab like a Logan Webb and Kodai Senga, like two guys that complement each other really well.
Yeah, kind of double tap here. This is where you go like, I'm going for two of these guys. Like I'm double tapping. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and that's what I've been doing just because I like the range of hitters in like the following few rounds, which includes those catchers that we talked about. And I think like grabbing two or three pitchers in the first like six rounds like allows you to then like invest a lot in hitting the, for the following like six rounds. If I'm doing one draft, I'll go the safer route and grab like a Logan Webb and like I mentioned Senga, but I want, if I'm doing multiple of these drafts, I'll grab, you know, I'll do maybe I'll do a Logan Gilbert, and Bobby Miller combo. I'll do Framber and Blake Snell combo. You know, there's a lot of combinations here that you can double tap and you could be perfectly fine with. Like you don't have to like, I don't want to be hyper focused on like, oh, I really love Bobby Miller. Like, I really like Bobby Miller. But if I'm doing six drafts, it probably would be wise to not have six Bobby Millers. Like, I could grab a Luzardo. I could grab Eflin. I can grab, I could diversify. This is a great, great range here in pitching. So like, this is where I like diversify.
This is why I keep buying three packs of DC. So my first three DCs, I diversified a little bit, but I actually ended up hating two of them, which scares me. I'm like, crap, that's a waste of all that money, you know, whatever. Two, so I'm like, I don't like two of my drafts. All right, cool. I bought a three pack. First draft's going on. I'm looking at it now. I'm like, not a huge fan of this one either. So I will be building. I do, but the thing is the difference in this one and the other ones is I have a very, very, like a much better plan for my reserve rounds. So I think it'll turn out to be just fine. And I think it'll be a competitive one. I just don't like it. I think that there's obvious warts that I can't cover up on the offense. Like, I didn't draft, like, I know I have Otani and Castellanos on this team. So it's like, okay, but I feel very light on power. And then I look, I'm like, well, I have Justin Turner, Tyro Shada, Dansby Swanson. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's why there's no power. It's a whole bunch of guys that are just like good, not great. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I got Jackson Winski. There's power, but there's not everyday playing time. Oh wait, I just named all these players. Where's my speed? So it's like, I've built this super mediocre team of like no real strengths, but like enough holes where there's like weaknesses are kind of obvious. So I think it's one of those things where it's like, it can be competitive for the league ish. Maybe it's not a great team. It's really, I'm pretty upset with how I built it. I think it's going to be, I think it'll be serviceable. I think it'll compete as long as it stays healthy. I think health is a huge factor in these leagues anyway, but it makes me, so I was like, now I have two more drafts to kind of get it right. And if I don't like those, I'll just buy another three pack. And it's stupid. But then I know, like, I'm gonna have to start doing, like, I'll be setting my lineups Saturday and Sunday because like at Fab and then setting lineups, it's like 6 months of that, it starts taking a toll.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have 6 months of patience setting nine DCs and three Fab leagues. I think three. Oh God, talk me out of it. Like just tell me that, like, I have to suck it up and deal with the outcomes. It goes back to knowing my strengths as a player. I thought DCs I'd be better at, and maybe it's one of those things. Maybe I'm just being hypercritical of my teams because, you know, it is what it is. You're drafting early. You have nothing to do but look at the teams you've drafted, just to realize, right, like, and you're nitpicking every little thing about them. Once games start, you realize, like, sometimes like, oh, that was overblown or so stuff like that. So it's one of those things where, yeah, maybe I just need to.
Yeah. Once the season rolls around, you'll find like, oh, this guy's doing well. Oh dang. Like, I got him in the 20th round in this draft. Like, nice.
Yeah. but until then, I'm over here just looking at my teams, how much I just dread them all. There's not a single team I like right now. And there's one team I like right now. And I'm just wondering what I can't seem to get fix that. Like, I don't know, in my brain's like wired to just look at this and hate everything because I just see all the weaknesses and I don't see any of the strengths. But anyway, I have nothing else to add. I think I'm done with this episode, if you are too.
this was fun just to talk through a lot of this stuff.
You can follow us on Twitter if you want to. What, George, you're at @Roto_Nino. I'm at @Mike_Kurland. Sorry, X, or what it's called. And this is episode 205. Yeah. All right, have a good one.